Previously on the audio files.
Hal Blaine was able to count off the beginning of what was going to turn into a record-setting recording a career.
Let's play drums. One, two, three, four.
Ah, famous Dave Simmons riff. You know, you got your pretty purdy riffs, you got your Simmons shuffle.
Chins up, boobs out, it's showtime.
Time for music.
A civilized conversation.
Wherever the music takes me, kitten.
Scott Edward Phelps.
Ah, yes, the legendary wit, or at least half of it.
Dave Simmons.
Good evening, Dave.
Can we not talk about sex so much?
Tell you right out, I'm a man who likes talking to a man who likes to...
The most important music show ever.
Cue inspirational music.
The Audio Files.
He's homosexual.
Not in this lifetime. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, depending on your global location around this here planet. If you will now open your Webster's and read along with us. Scandal, an action or event regarded as morally or legally wrong and causing general public outrage. Tabloid, sensational in a lurid or vulgar way. But we'll talk more later about the American electoral system. This week, noteworthy events in popular music, worthy of note because they have a tendency to inspire a healthy burst of...
What the fuck?
And hold that thought, too, for just a minute, because George Harrison sang in one of his last numbers, if you don't know where you're going, any road will take you there. Well sung, Quiet Beetle. Well sung. But it's equally true that you can't do new business till you take care of old business, and we left some business undone last week about this time. So let the business be done with an opening bit of Bye-Bye.
Solo Cup is the best receptacle for barbecues, tailgates, fairs, and festivals. And you, sir, do not have a pair of testicles if you prefer drinking from glass.
Woo! Red Solo Cup, I fill you up. Let's have a party. Let's have a party.
The gun smoke settles. We'll sing a victory tune and we'll all meet back at the local saloon.
We'll raise up our glasses against evil forces, singing whiskey for my men, beer for my horses.
I had that on a bumper sticker when I was in marriage number two. I don't know why. It was beer drinking days, I will tell you that. Toby Keith, to all you country music fans already know that, and to those who don't, Toby Keith, who passed away last week, just a little before we went on air.
Yes, we...
And we were talking about Hal Blaine and lots of stuff, so we kind of overlooked at least giving a little tip of the cowboy hat to Toby.
You have to.
Well, we just did, yeah. And we're still doing it.
Very good artist.
He was. Yeah, he was. He was a good singer. I'm always an asshole when it comes to the term artist because, you know, it's a long story. Well, we'll do an. You know what? We'll do a whole episode one time. I promise. I make this pledge. We'll do a whole episode on all the varieties and various ways that things annoy me, and we'll call it something like, "Hey, Scott, what the fuck is wrong with you? And why are you always complaining about shit?" And I'll get it all out of my system, and then we'll have 3-4 good weeks before I crank it up again.
There we go.
Bless his heart. He was only 62, died of stomach cancer. He'd been battling it for a little while. A
couple years, actually.
I think so.
Yeah.
And remember I told you in our little private conversation the other day about him, I said there was the first time that I met the guy, I was co-managing Tower Records in Nashville, and we used to do parking lot, flatbed truck concerts because we were two blocks from Music Row. And in 1993, Mercury Records came up with this promotion, and I went Googling. It took me a little while to find it, but I found it, and it reminded me, aha, this is what I was telling Dave. Mercury called it their triple play. They were introducing three new artists at the time. Toby Keith was one of them, a young fellow by the name of John Brannon, who went on to nothing. And a young lady who was... she had had her first album was released. It had been produced by Harold Shedd, who was the producer of the country supergroup Alabama. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And she had a single that was racing up the country charts and never got quite that high. You may recognize her voice.
As the words came out, I heard a voice inside me say, what made you say that? Was it the moonlight? Was it the sun?
The record didn't go anywhere, but she found a new producer and she cranked out some of this kind of stuff.
It's too late now.
Let's and then go, her girl. Producer found her best friend.
That's right. And married her, and then she married her best friend's ex-husband. Yeah, that's right. Crazy. Francois Truffaut or whatever his name was. Anyway, that was the introduction of Shania Twain as well.
Yes.
On that same flatbed truck that day in 1993 in the Tower parking lot.
Wasn't Toby just a nice guy?
He was okay.
Yeah.
Of course, he was new and he was hungry to make it and he was being personable. And I understand that he was quite the charitable fellow and a good guy too. The only poke I have with him is that he has nudged in recent years dangerously close to being a full blown MAGA supporter. And I get a little rectal when that goes down.
Right,
but that's part and parcel of what's going on. He was a good guy and he made good songs and He had a, His voice has a little Trace Adkins, a little of that gruffy, froggy baritone.
Right.
But at the time, I think Toby was the only one who had it going. And he was, and again, this was 1993.
So.
So he had a good 30-year run, which ain't too shabby.
Nice.
Well, I'll tell you a point, and this is something else he did too that I did respect. He was, Bear for My Horses was an interesting song, but it was a little outside the country parameters of the day. Red Solo Cup was way left field, but it was a big hit. Of course, they tried to talk him out of it, but the label did. But the labels know. But this is a song I wanted to feature for just a minute for two reasons. So I can name drop. I don't know Bobby Braddock personally, and I've never met him personally, but I have chatted with him on Facebook a number of times. He's a Facebook friend. He is one of the few living iconic country music songwriters. He co-wrote "He Stopped Loving Her Today," the George Jones signature song. A number of other pieces. He co-wrote the Billy Currington thing that I love. God is great, beer is good, and people are crazy.
Yeah.
He's my hero. And he also co-wrote this song that Toby Keith took a chance on because everybody said, I don't know, man, that sounds like a rap song, and you know, that's not our deal, because it was like 15 or 20 years ago. But I tell you what, for all you guys out there anywhere who have had relationships with women, or God, doesn't matter. But yeah, guys, who've had relationship with girls, ladies. If you're about to, or if you're thinking, you need to hear a little chunk of this song written by Bobby Braddock and performed ably by Toby Keith.
We talk about your work, how your boss is a jerk. We talk about your church and your head when it hurts. We talk about the troubles you've been having with your brother, about your daddy and your mother and your crazy ex-lover. We talk about your guys of every shape and size, the ones that you despise and the ones you idolize. We talk about your heart, about your brains and your smarts and your medical charts and when you start. You know talking about you makes me grin. But every now and then, I want to talk about me, want to talk about I, want to talk about number one. Oh my, me, my, what I think, what I like, what I know, what I want, what I see. I like talking about you usually. But occasionally, I want to talk about me. I want to talk about me. I want to talk about me. Want to talk about I. Want to talk about number one. Oh, my, me, my. What I think, what I like, what I know, what I want, what I see.
Not only a tremendous amount of fun, but an absolutely true life truth right there in your face.
Yes, I mean mine.
And when you start, that's what we're going to talk about. I'm not going to hear about it.
That's too funny. Right. Also, I like his... I'm not as good as I once was, but I'm as good once as I ever was.
You know, that was an old saying even back in my dad's day. He used to carry a card in his wallet that I'm sure he showed it to chicks, but that's exactly what it said.
Yeah.
I'm not as good as I once was, but I'm as good once as I ever was.
Yes.
Along with the other card he carried that said, if I'd known I was going to live this long, I'd have taken better care of myself.
There you go. That's old Mickey Mantle.
There you go.
Yeah.
Toby Keith, 62. Life well lived, Doug.
Yes.
Good for you. All right, immorality, adultery, sacrilege, sprinkled with sanctimony. Sounds like another day at the Dave Simmons household. Maybe maybe even a little bestiality, and we won't go there. Don't change that dial, but first, speaking of the Super Bowl this past weekend, of all the groundbreaking, record-shattering, life-changing events that occurred in Vegas this past Sunday, none ranks higher or has more impact on our lives on this planet than the stunning, and we mean stunning news, we just got this news Sunday, Beyonce has gone country. No way, you say?
Mm-hmm.
Yes way.
Oh my God!
As we witness the last nail in George Jones's coffin, and we're going to write a record at the top of the charts.
Here's the top of the charts.
The audio files.
I want to set the record straight.
It's go time.
How would you rate this one?
Okay, anybody here have an opinion?
What do you think, Dave?
Put aside logic,
Scott.
Good. Very good.
Bad. Very bad.
Wow, groovy.
Oh my gosh, does that suck?
Well, which is it?
Now's my chance to find out.
Two guys who know tunes, listening to tunes.
How did you rate the record?
I gave it an 85 because I liked the music and it was easy to dance to.
The audio files.
And just for the record, I don't care.
All right, I'm not going to give it any more introduction or slant our opinions in one way or the other, except to offer you that this is from the forthcoming country-themed album by Beyonce.
This ain't Texas. Ooh. Ain't no hold'em. Hey. So lay your cards down, 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 down. So pocket Lexus. And throw your keys up. Hey. Stick around, round, 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 round.
Stick around.
And I'll be damned if I can't slow dance with you. Come pour some sugar on me, honey, too. It's a real live boogie and a real live hold down. Don't be a bitch, come take it to the floor now. Woo! Huh. There's a tornado.
Ooh.
In my city.
In my city.
In the basement.
The basement.
That shit ain't pretty.
That shit ain't pretty.
We'll get away.
Baby, pour that sugar and liquor on me too.
Spurs, spurs, boots.
Sodogenic, photogenic, shoot.
Listen very carefully for just a moment. Shh. There, you hear that? Mr. Acuff, Miss Minnie Pearl. let's see who else. In there. Porter Wagner. That low-grade sound, you hear that? Yeah, they're spinning in their graves. You know, I was going to say, I got nothing against one genre artist or performer of another kind of going over and trying to do. And
I mean, Lionel Richie did it.
It's an art, and mm-hmm. art means that you're flexible. But it just, why does it seem to me that everything this woman does, and especially in light of who she's married to and how he's been behaving himself in recent months, weeks, years, it's all about notice me. It's not really about I've decided to pay tribute to the great country artists and I have a deep dying respect. Now, maybe that's where they're coming from, but this, you know, and by the way, and I'm not, God knows anybody knows me knows I ain't no prude, no how, no way. In case you missed it, come pour some sugar on me, honey, too. It's a real life boogie and a real life hoedown. Don't be a bitch. Come take it to the floor now. There's a tornado in my city in the basement. That shit ain't pretty.
Oh, I thought she said something about her titties.
No, she managed to keep her tits out of it.
It's a Mondegreen.
It is now. All right, that's my feeling. It's like, okay, really? Okay,
good for you. I always look at songs on a couple different levels. Production-wise, great production. Everything is crisp.
And I will say this.
You will agree with me.
I'll agree there, and I'll also say that I glanced up at one moment from all the dozen things that I do over here when I'm driving the big ship, and I looked over, and damn you, if you couldn't help it because you're a percussionist. Your head was bobbing.
It was.
The groove was there.
The groove is there.
But still.
And I'm not real fond of the song, but I mean, it's probably going to do well.
Oh, of course.
You know, it's Beyonce.
Queen B.
And you know, with Jay-Z's backing. But I think...
I can't wait for him to crash the CMA stage and say, Beyonce won the best of all, and I don't know why she didn't get the award for the best artist of the year. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they need Kanye to do that.
I'm looking forward to that. As Vince Gill goes, what the fuck is wrong with these people?
But no, I don't have anything against it. Great production. Yeah. The song is a mediocre written song as far as the actual composition of the song.
I agree. It just reeks of, hey, let's do something like a novelty.
It's cookie cutter.
It's Sally G without the sense of humor.
Yeah.
Paul McCartney did Sally G 50 years ago, but he was making fun of himself, making fun of country music.
Right. Okay. Now, like when Blanco Brown did the Giddy Up, that little country dance.
Sure.
It was a novelty, but it had a little dance to it, and it has a certain kind of charm to it.
Right.
And, you know, we opened for him last year, and he pulled it off, and he had that country charm to him.
Sure.
This doesn't reek of charm.
No, it doesn't. It reeks, but it doesn't make a charm.
It reeks.
And not, you know, and it doesn't. What we say is both of us freely admit we're in that category where it's, and now welcome to another episode of Who Fucking Cares What You Guys Think?
Right,
because
right.
Her fans, and they're going to love it. And there's that. So good on her. All right. An R&B pioneer who made Nick Cannon look like a priest. Was a time you could always get what you want if what you wanted was radio airplay for your song. Neither Dave nor I have slept with her, as far as I know at this moment, which apparently makes us unique. And back in the day, bragging rights were best expressed without any mention of saviors. All of that and pretty cool music, courtesy of some infamous tabloid tunesmiths.
There was a mama and a papa and a boy who was grown. He wanted to marry, have wife of his own. He met a young girl, suited him nice. He went to his papa to ask his advice. His papa said, son, I have to say no. That girl is your sister, but your mama don't know. Hey, that worries me. Shame and scandal in the family.
The very talented guy who put back into the rock and roll pop icon music con a long time ago, that's Trini Lopez. So we decided we'd talk about a couple of scandals and or horrific, oh my gosh, what was that and what's going on? Dave comes up first, but before he does his little thing here, I want to throw this at you by way of an intro on it. You all may not know this man's name unless you're a total music geek. I don't mean Dave Simmons. I'm talking about who Dave's going to talk about. Well, you may not know who Dave is, and if that's the case, that's your loss. But here's the thing.
I don't know who that is.
I don't know who that is. Our favorite live radio moment. I like you, but I don't know who that other guy is. Get him out of the studio. But you may know his name, you may not neither, and you may not even know the music that he's famous for. But I've known for a long, long time. He was a successful songwriter, but one of the songs that he first recorded back with one of his beginning groups was actually one of the very first times that many people in my generation heard on one of their very first albums, the Rolling Stones.
Well, baby used to stay out all night long. She made me cry. She done me wrong. She hurt my eyes open. That's no lie. Tables turning now. Her time to cry. Because I used to.
The original recording. Written by the guy and recorded by his group, the Valentinos, the very first group. Tell us about Mr. Writer.
We're talking about Bobby Womack. And when you think about scandalous activities, mm-hmm. It's hard not to think about Bobby Womack. And let me break it down to you. He was Sam Cooke's backing guitarist.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And he was a songwriter. He had a 60-year career. I mean, he was prolific.
Sure.
When Sam Cooke was tragically killed, 77 days after his death, a 20-year-old Womack and Cooke's widow, Barbara, who was 10 years older than Bobby Womack,
I thought there's anything wrong with that.
Attempted to get married at the Los Angeles County Courthouse. And the only reason we know all this is because the press was there.
Mm-hmm.
Womack was in one of Cook's suits.
Hey, baby, let me borrow the tweed.
But they basically, he wasn't 21. He was only 20 at the time.
Okay.
So he couldn't get married that day. So it ended up, they ended up getting married, you know, after that.
Right.
But this was so messed up that even Womack's own brothers turned against him. The DJs turned against him. Well,
What were they objecting to, the wedding or the fact that he took the suit?
77 days after Sam Cooke's murder, you know, he took the suit. He took his bride. So this all happened. As a matter of fact, Sam Cooke's brothers broke his jaw in a Chicago hotel not long after that. So they were married up until about 1970.
So about five years. Yeah, that was my average back in those days.
Womack and Barbara Cook separated after she discovered he was having an affair with, get this, Linda Cook, Sam Cook's 17-year-old daughter.
You know, the only thing to be grateful for in this entire story is that it's not taking place today. Otherwise, it would be some damn reality show that we would be watching every single time we turned around.
Well, that's not it. He was so, their relationship was so volatile that.
Whose relationship?
Barbara, and the mother.
Okay.
Over this daughter that she shot him in the head. Now, luckily, the bullet only grazed his head. It didn't kill him. Mm-hmm. So they finally finalized a divorce in 1971. Mm. And the really strange thing happened there. He was going to get married.
The really strange thing happened there.
He was going to get married to Linda, but that never happened. Mm. Linda basically was like, you know what? I kind of like your brother. So Linda ended up marrying Bobby Womack's brother. Now, Bobby's other brother, in 1974, right around that same period of time, he was fatally stabbed in the neck with a steak knife by his girlfriend, Patricia Wilson, in a jealous rage over Linda. This is because she was collaborating with all the Womack brothers' writing and everything.
Of course.
You know, and Linda ended up marrying Cecil Womack, which is his youngest brother. And they formed the duo of Womack and Womack. And they had a big hit with a song called Baby, I'm Scared of You.
I can't imagine
which
why.
Which I, you know, if you're going to be stabbing people in the neck with a steak knife, that would happen. But all of this crammed into one. He died in June of 2014. But all of this crammed into this little short life. Mm. He's a music legend. Mm-hmm. But I've never seen a life lived like this.
No, I came perilously close to living one, but he lost me at the suit. I at least had my own clothes.
You at least had your own clothes.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I just found this fascinating that it was like he married the widow.
Yeah, got it.
Then he cheated on the widow with the daughter.
Well, you can find out all about it too on a three CD box set with all of Bobby Womack's greatest hits musically, and the album is entitled "Vice Be Nice, But Incest the Best."
Oh my Lord, that's amazing though.
All right, when it comes to scandals, this is going to pale because this is like nothing. But back in the 1950s, all you needed to have a hit record on the radio was talent, a solid work ethic, a great song, and denominations of 1, 5, 10, 20, and 50.
Well, here's 3,000. That ought to get it on. Thanks a lot, man. I love your new song.
Catch you what I wanna. Catch you what I wanna. Catch you what I wanna. Catch you what I wanna.
No matter where I go, I never hear my record on the radio. And it goes like this.
This one's for you, Alan Freed. Wherever you go.
Back in the 1950s, in the late 1950s, there was a big scandal. If you do the Wiki or the Google, you'll find it under payola, the payola scandal. And in this day and time, with all the crap we got going on in this country, let alone in this world, this would be like, really? It didn't even make the 6 o'clock news. Who cares? But you got to remember, back in the 1950s, people actually had, what's that thing they used to have? Oh, morality. That's
integrity.
What it was. Integrity. Thank you. Morality. Integrity. All right, and this is a quick in and out because there's not that much to say except that disc jockeys were taking money bribes from record guys and record producers and in some cases artists to play their records on the radio. And you have to remember that in that period of the day, there was only two ways that you could be exposed. Your music, your product could be exposed. One was on the radio. In order for that to happen, the DJ had to play it. There were no streaming services. There was no internet where you could go and download the product. And I would include television in that because it was around and you could play your songs there. But this was everyday thing, the radio and the radio stations. Okay.
Or you had to go on the road and present it live.
Yeah. And record companies would send records to the radio stations. They called them promo records, but there was no guarantee the DJs would play them or the program directors would put them into the playlist. As a matter of fact, my work in Tower Records for nigh on 15 years, I used to tell people that one of the great things about that gig was that we got a lot of free records because they would service us, the record companies would, much the same they did the radio stations. And I said there were many, many years during my two sons' very early days that Christmas was such a delightful time because the kids would run down, and in Christmas morning, they would come rushing into the room with the tree, and they'd see all these presents, and they'd rip open their packages, and with their eyes glistening in the Christmas magic, they'd go, "Daddy, what does promotional use only mean?" And I'd say, "It means Santa made it just for you."
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
But as far as the payola was concerned, the man and mentioned, Neil Young mentions right there in the little song excerpt, the name Alan Freed. Alan Freed was kind of the Christopher Columbus of American disc jockeys. That's a crappy metaphor, but it's, he was big. He was very big. He was a pioneer. He was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1986. The nominees came out this week and the Monkees aren't in there. So get ready for Dave to explode at any moment.
Fuck the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
There we go. His role in breaking down racial barriers, Alan Freed, not Dave's, was by leading black and white kids to the same music. He was really a solid supporter and a pioneer in his way. Unfortunately, he had some character flaws, one of which was he was happy to take their money and play the records in that way.
He was on the take.
And he was a lush. He was an alcoholic. In fact, he died of alcoholism. But I didn't know this about him because I knew a fair amount. Oh, by the way, a little trivia before I carry on with that real quick. The term payola. This is where I'm going to use my NPR voice here because this is very educational. The term payola is a combination of pay and ola, the latter of which is a suffix of product names common in the early 20th century, such as pianola, victrola, amberola, crayola, rockola, shinola, and the radio equipment manufacturer Motorola.
Mm.
That's why they called it payola. It was kind of the 1950s equivalent of gate. You know, now everything is a gate. There's onion gate. There's
deflate gate.
Deflate gate. Tribal gate. There's garden gate. There's,
I thought it was, here's the bunny. Hola.
Hola. That's not bad. Could be. That'd be au revoir as they cart you off to jail. Anyway, Freed took money. The scandal broke. It was a big thing. A lot of people got fired. They lost their gig. But what I didn't know, little bonus. Oh, really? Was it in the early 60s, his career was destroyed by payola, but he also was double whammied by the fact that he was sued a couple of times and then accused in more than one situation of taking credit for writing or co-writing songs.
Oh, really?
That he did not, in fact. And one in particular, it actually went out with Alan Freed dash the name of the other writer, who was also the performer of the song, who was a guy that didn't take no shit and took him to court and got that name erased. A little song you might remember.
Maybelline, why can't you be true? Oh, Maybelline, why can't you be true? You just started back doing the thing you used to do.
Now, it's no secret that Tom Parker in his Elvis days was wont to make sure that part of the deal was if Elvis was going to cut one of your songs, then he got co-writer credit whether he had anything to do with it or not.
Dolly said no.
That's right.
Yeah, Dolly was one of the ones that said no.
He was going to record I'll Always Love You. And then he said to her, we want, and she said, no, I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way it goes. But in this case, this was Alan Freed, I think, just muscling because he was
right.
Alan Freed, and it was, I won't play your records, and et cetera.
Well, there's the famous Johnny Carson.
Yeah.
With the Tonight Show theme.
Yeah.
And didn't...
Put your head on my shoulder.
Yeah, what's his name wrote that, right?
Paul Anka.
Paul Anka.
And, I only came to it quicker because I'm older.
But Paul Anka was basically like, all right, whatever.
You know what else Paul Anka inflicted on the American musical scene? Besides You're Having My Baby?
No.
Yeah. He wrote the English lyrics to a melody that had been a very successful song over in France. Ended it my way.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Paul was a real schlub.
Oh, Paul.
Anyway, Maybelline, Chuck Berry said, get out of my life, and that was the end of that. Alan Freed died young, relatively young of alcoholism, so there's a real upbeat end to the story.
Hey, we love it. We love it.
This time around, we're talking about scandals.
You're listening to Scott Edward Phelps, Dave Simmons, The Audio Files.
You can't marry this girl, have to say no. That girl is your auntie, but your granny don't know. Hey!
When it comes to assessing the fairer sex, nobody has a more finely honed skill in the art of eyeing little girls with bad intent than Ian Anderson from Jethro Tull. But number two with a bullet, Mr. Laffer, that would have to be our own Dave Simmons.
Dave Simmons.
Hey,
Dave.
Hey. What you got?
What's up? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Infatuation, which has nothing to do with Jenny Craig or Nutrisystem.
This is an interesting one, Scott. I, you know, many pounds ago, and you know, I looked good when I was young. We had the record deal.
Well, you're still quite the kid.
We were playing a nightclub in Dover, Delaware. It's a place called Cadeau's. Al Cadeau, rest in peace. One of the nights we were there, and we were very popular in this area, as you well know. One of the nights we were there, before we played in the afternoon, someone broke into the club and wrote their name next to my head on all the posters in lipstick. It's a real Glenn Close moment. Uh-huh. And
I won't be ignored then.
Well, basically, you know, and they didn't know who did it. And it was, it's not like it took a mastermind to get into the club. You know, no. You pull the door hard, it would come open.
And everybody carried lipstick.
Yes. Sure. So we start playing at night. We get to the club. We hear about somebody broke in. The police had been there, blah, blah, blah. We get there. We start playing. And as we're playing, there's a girl standing in the middle of the dance floor just staring at me. Not dancing. Everyone else is dancing.
Sure.
It was like something you see in one of those weird, you know, horror movies or something. So I'm like, yeah, this is kind of odd. And we play the whole set. She doesn't move. So there used to be a little dressing room off the left side of the stage. So I go into that. I'm there. The next thing you know, that girl that was on the dance floor is back there, and it's just the two of us alone in this dance floor. Lawsuit. I mean, in this little room.
Lawsuit pending.
So she and I kind of recognize her, and I'm like, well, where do I know you from? And she's like, I used to work with you when you were in high school at Kitty World. It was a toy store.
Yeah, okay.
And I'm like, oh, yeah. I think your name was like Karen or something. She's like, yeah. And it was weird because I don't think she blinked the entire time I was talking to her. It was really bizarre. So she said,
I would have ended up marrying.
This was her exact words. I told my husband about us. And uh-oh. I'm like, what? And I had not seen her since I was 16 years old.
I'm thinking more of your reaction was something like this.
What the fuck? And I was like, what did you told your husband? What? And she's like, yeah, you know, I told him we were in love. And I'm like, oh, Lord. So the way the room was set out, she comes at me, not like fast, but she's walking at me while she's talking to me.
Right.
And I'm like, oh, this is really getting bizarre. And I'm hoping another guy in the band comes back in the room and nobody's coming. I'm here with this psycho bitch by myself. And there's a back door. So she hands me a wad of cash. She opens her purse and hands me a wad of cash. And it had to be $100, $200. And this is 1988, maybe 87, 88. And I'm like, what's this for? She goes, you can have that if we can just, you know, be together tonight. And I'm like, no, I give it back to her. And she's like, but I love you. And it was just this weird, it was really bizarre.
I'll tell you, you're making me all misty because it's reminding me of marriage number three.
So anyway, I said, all right. She goes, well, can you just give me a kiss? And I'm like, yeah, sure. So I lean in, she leans in, I spin her around, I open the back door, shove her out, and shut the back door. Because there was a little door in the back of the room. And then the next thing I hear is, I'm going to kill you.
Oh, good.
Oh, it was crazy. It was just insane. So I'm just like really weirded out by this whole situation.
Can't imagine why.
Later that night, and luckily I got Ty Tolliver to walk out with me, we walk outside, and this guy comes walking up to me, and he goes, where's my wife? And Ty was a bigger than I am, because I'm not imposing at all. And I said,
pretty attractive, apparently.
I said, who's your wife? And he's like, you know who my wife is. And, you know, Ty steps up and like, man, you better just go on your way.
Yeah.
And Ty was imposing. So the guy leaves. He's mumbling and leaving. And I'm like, thanks, Ty.
Luckily, you didn't have a public job where you had to continue being in public.
No, because I was a full-time musician then. So about 3 days later, after all this goes down, 3 days later, I run into her in a 7-Eleven.
Of course.
and she's got a big black eye.
Not the husband.
No. Her. Okay. The girl.
No, I'm saying it wasn't her husband with her.
No. She was by herself.
Right.
And I'm just like, what happened to you? And she's like, oh, my husband hit me.
Oh, big black eye. I swear to God.
Big black guy.
I thought you said big black guy.
Yeah, no. Okay, and she said, my husband hit me. And I was like, oh, yeah, that sucks. I
can't imagine why.
Sucks to be you. So you know, that was the parting of that whole
thing that happened. You probably caused her to get hit in the eye, dude. Well, I mean, you know, come on.
It wasn't my fault. I had nothing to do with that shit.
Well, you turned her away.
But here's the crazy thing, and you'll get a kick out of this.
Oh, I haven't gotten a kick out of any of this yet.
About six years later, I'm going in to have just a minor procedure. I had like a cyst taken off my hand, and they're getting me ready for surgery. And I look up, and the nurse that's getting me ready is the crazy girl.
Of course it is.
I'm like,
did she remember you?
Yes.
Was she normal then?
She was more normal then. She wasn't whacked. I think she was really drunk or on drugs or so. I don't know what.
Well, maybe
she
had some kind of a mental illness, and she recovered and went on to be in politics.
But I'm like, if they put me under, there's a good chance I'm not coming back out.
The only thing that would make that total Twilight Zone material would be that if they did wheel you in for the procedure, and then the doctor who stepped up was the husband.
That would have fucking sucked, dude.
Well, then, see, that would be the twisted joy of it, though, because of the irony of it all, because you wouldn't be here now to tell us the story if that had happened.
But that was, I mean, you talk about a bizarre, crazy situation, tabloid-like.
I'm thinking.
Yeah, so.
There's one now. All right. I don't know how to follow that. Except to say, this is a classic. We've reached a point in our lives where, because of our age, I had this happen to me the other day. I said something to somebody, and I started to say, I was just talking naturally, because it was one of those events that in my life has been so well known that everybody that I've ever known has always known about it. But I sometimes lose track of the fact. I'm in my 70s. Dave is gently, delightedly nudging 60. And the two of us have had things happen or been around when things have happened in life. Where somebody who's even 30 or even 40 years old may not necessarily know about it at all.
For sure.
Or may not have heard anything other than just, oh yeah, I heard there was something going on, This is one of those things. So bear with us. It's fun. If he had said they were more popular than Holly Holy, for example, an eyebrow would not have raised. Alas, he felt like he needed a little higher power for some comparison. So let's all say a little prayer for him in this week's 6 Degrees.
6 Degrees of SEP.
John Lennon from a little band you might have heard of back in the 1960s, Cats and Kitties. They called themselves the Beatles. And in 1966, John Lennon was giving an interview to a reporter by the name of Maureen Cleave. Maureen was a popular British journalist who had interviewed the boys many times, became friends with them. It was a long interview for some teen magazine. And in the course of the teen magazine, they talked about lots of different subjects. They started talking about popularity, the Beatlemania, the phenomenon, and the phenomenon, all the rest of it. And in passing, John kind of alluded to the fact that it was kind of nutty in a, wow, isn't this weird, this kind of stuff happens way, that he said the Beatles were so popular. They were very popular. There was a mania. That's why they called it Beatlemania. Kind of picture what's going on nowadays with Taylor Swift. It's a little different because of the technology that's available and all the things that happened. But remember, this was in 1966. There was no internet.
No.
For 50 million people to be made aware of the Beatles and all that, and it was that kind of adulation. And what John said was, remarking in a sort of a philosophical way, he said, we're more popular than sliced bread. We're more popular than toast and jam. We're more popular than an Egg McMuffin. He didn't say all those things. What he said was, we're more popular than Jesus. The kids would rather come and see us than go to church. An innocuous, perhaps a little edgy comment, but it was just in the course of a conversation.
It was true.
It was absolutely true. Then a disc jockey, well, Lennon was immediately pummeled with hate, screaming, oh my God, how can you compare yourself to Jesus? Things where there were bonfires where they burned the albums, and a lot of that took place in the Deep South, go figure. Wait for just a second. he was asked repeatedly in the heat of it all, why and what are you thinking and all the rest of that. And he held his ground for a week or two, but then they realized they had serious PR problems. And so he was asked at a public interview to explain why he had said what he said and what it was all about.
Well, originally I was pointing out that fact in reference to England, that we meant more to kids than Jesus did, or religion at that time. I wasn't knocking it or putting it down, I was just saying it. But the fact it is true more for England than here. I'm not saying that we're better or greater, or comparing us with Jesus Christ as a person, or God as a thing. I just said what I said, and it was wrong, or was taken wrong, and now it's all this.
I did a little research, though, because this happened when I was 15. I was available and aware of the whole big whirlwind that happened. They were burning. I mean, they were having bonfires down in Alabama to throw Beatle records on them because they had, he had besmirched their Lord and Savior.
You heard what they said.
That's right. There was, and I went in search of what we call patient zero. Where did the virus first break into the mainstream? Well, after John said, and by the way, the interview had taken place much, much earlier in the year and got pulled out of context and printed somewhere, and was announced on the air by a, big shock coming, Birmingham, Alabama disc jockey by the name of Tommy Charles. During the whirlwind of the maelstrom, there's your big words this week, kids, a BBC interviewer went over and talked to Tommy Charles, the DJ from Birmingham, Alabama.
Well, hi, everybody. This is Tommy Charles on the air here at WAQI Radio in Birmingham, Alabama.
Tommy, why this violent reaction to what John Lennon said?
Well, I wouldn't call exactly what I have done a violent reaction. However, the Beatles for a long time have been able to, because of their tremendous popularity throughout the world, especially with a younger set, been able to say whatever they wanted to without any regard for judgment or maturity or the wisdom of it. And no one yet has challenged them to any tremendous degree where it might count or where they might feel it.
Wasn't this a serious article asking John Lennon how he felt about things? Wasn't he just being honest?
I suppose. You never can tell about him. His answers are so flippant, and his attitude is so bizarre in many instances that you never know whether he's honest or not. And honesty is a relative matter to the seriousness of the moment or the mood of the person. It would be the same as if an American group such as myself or an American singing group sounded off on the Queen and really took her to task and said, who needs her? And she's on her way out. And the system of having a king and a queen is ridiculous, and it's shrinking and going to fade.
Tommy, you're quoted as saying that though you're 36, you think like a teenager. Did you find your teenage listeners backed you up on your stand?
They did. For 3 hours, our three phone lines lit up, and they responded, and they said, get rid of the Beatles, ban the records, burn them, or do something with them. And we acted, of course, on our own convictions, but we were backed up by the people, especially the younger people of this area.
Now, speaking of the people in the area, the youngsters in Alabama, who stepped right up and were totally in support of this whole thing of banning the Beatles and burning the Beatles, the BBC guy went out on the street and he talked to just a couple of few of them.
Well, I think the Beatles are a real talented group, but I think that they need to watch what they say, because they're in such a position that a lot of teenagers really think of them as something really big. And when they say things like that, some teenagers are going to just believe anything they say.
But are you burning your Beatles records?
Yes, sir, I burn them.
You burned them all yourself?
I've already burned them.
Where? How?
Well, our Sunday school at MYF, we had a program about the Beatles. We have supper at MYF, and it was in our backyard. So after we'd finished cooking the hot dogs, I just put my records on there.
Linda, you run this record store. How many Beatles records were you selling before this row started?
Oh, quite a few.
And since?
They've dropped off considerably.
The store hasn't thought of banning Beatles records.
No, of course not. We promote anything that sells.
You don't have moral principles like
no, well, in other words, whatever sells, we're not questioning. We have many artists here. If we were to go into questioning everyone's morals in every record that we have, it wouldn't pay. I mean, we just wouldn't be in business.
I was stunned when I heard that piece of the interview, because I thought to myself, my God, there's a Southern woman in a Southern town in the year 1966 who's showing the good sense to say this is really stupid and we're going to continue to sell the product.
But right, right.
I also got nostalgic because I thought of all the young years when I went to church with the family before I discovered religion and decided it wasn't for me. And I missed such an opportunity to burn records after we'd had a hot dog or two.
What I found fascinating was after Lennon, went on with his quote unquote apology, right, everybody that burned the records went out and rebought them. So right, the Beatles just made more money.
Well, in the South, and not to cast aspersions on the South, which is what I'm going to do anyway, in those days, and it's still true to a certain extent. And this was interesting. That whole interview, I thought seriously, I'm going to I'm going to toss the link to you and let you listen to it. It goes on about 45 minutes. It was really well done, this guy. I don't remember his name, the British guy. And it was done at the time. That might be almost worth an entire show talking about those days and that stuff and everything that went on. We'll talk about that later.
Right,
but
right.
But in there, he asks the question to somebody. He said, well, there, and he does it very skillfully. He's, because he was in Birmingham, Alabama in 1966.
Right, right.
He said, you're talking to me about morality and integrity and values, and this is the place that has been turning fire hoses on black people and putting Martin Luther King in prison, and you ought to hear the sidestepping answers that come out of the lovely southern mouths.
You know.
Now, that's different, you see, because that's not casting aspersions on our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. That's taken care of.
And plus, he's a darkie. So it's right.
Well, you know, but then British people, they come perilously close to categorizing, qualifying for that. So look it up on the wiki or the Googie, kids. There's a lot of
that is crazy.
A lot of interesting stuff to be learned right there.
You're listening to The Audiophiles.
Scandals and salaciousness, oh my. And speaking of eyeing little girls with bad intent, the password is jailbait.
Now she's looking mighty good, like a young girl should. We try to tell you no, and let that young girl go. And now it's too late, as you look from cell number 8. I tried to tell you, mate, 17 and a half is still jail bait.
Now, I don't know that to be true personally, but I do know on reliable authority that that's correct information.
So we're told.
But we go to our resident expert on the subject.
Yes, yes.
Dave Simmons.
Actually, this is just think of Me Too was around then. Yeah. The Me Too movement.
It would have been called Not So Much Me.
Yeah. Lori Maddox, or Maddox, she spelled her name a couple different ways. She was a child model. And she became one of the groupies. She was the baby groupie of the bunch, you know, with Pamela DeBars and all those groupies that were portrayed in Almost Famous.
Yep.
Yeah. So basically, she was involved in sexual relationships with David Bowie, Jimmy Page, Mick Jagger. But the one that's really stands out here, she met David Bowie during the Ziggy Stardust tour in October 1972. She was 13. When the tour returned to Los Angeles, 5 months after she initially met him, the night before he performed at the Long Beach Arena, Bowie's bodyguard was sent to pick her and another star, somebody, I think Linda Starr was her name, which was another groupie, up for a sexual encounter.
Yeah.
And in Lori Maddox's words, her and Bowie de-virginized me that night. I lost my virginity and had my first threesome. At 13.
Well, that was a big night.
Hey, I mean, if you can get it, good work if you can get it. So then she continued on to have a relationship with Jimmy Page of Led Zeppelin.
Who, 14. By the way, and I found this real quick, not to break your train of thought because it's in that category. He supposedly, he was accused of or said that and blah, blah, and he kind of went, not necessarily. There was an album cut of Led Zeppelin's called Sick Again.
Yes.
He put a little line in. One day soon you're going to reach 16. Painted lady of the streets.
Well, apparently, Page was 28 at the time. He began a relationship with the 14-year-old Maddox and basically kept her sequestered and under guard in a hotel in Los Angeles.
Now, that's all supposedly.
This is all according to Lori Maddox.
Oh, well, that sold books, no doubt.
At the insistence of his manager, Peter Grant, the Peter Grant stories, we ought to do a whole episode on him.
Salacious and scandalous.
Oh, yeah. So she was kept locked in a hotel room with a security guard at the door during the U.S. tour, and Page would fly back and forth to Los Angeles to spend time with her. On the Starship, which was Led Zeppelin's private plane.
Right.
But she engaged physically and sexually with Mick Jagger, Jeff Beck, Ronnie Wood.
Well, first of all, I think it's important that we offer this, and I know it sounds like I'm going for a sarcastic setup, but I'm not. I think it's important to realize that she said all these things, and all these various male rock stars who are attributed to or reported to have had sexual relations with this. Nobody with any sense at all who was around in those days, and I speak in personal experience, has any doubts that 90% of it is all true.
Yes.
But that's not to cast aspersions solely on the girl or women saying they were whores or they were sluts or they were whatever. These guys, this was the culture. It was Caligula, man. They just did it, and it was part of the. And I got news for you. If you're, and I don't want to break any bubbles now in case you're a youngster, but you've come to love the Beatles and you came to love them as the four fun mop tops. Well, they had that period too, but don't think for a single second that almost from the get-go, they were ushering girls in and out of that. Ushering, by the way, has a whole new meaning these days, but we won't go there. Ushering girls in and out of those hotel rooms like nobody's business. It's been around forever.
Well, Larry Kane basically said he was put in a bad situation once or twice where he had to go down and talk to adults about the age of the girls that were coming up. Right. Because he remember the first U.S. tour – he toured with the Beatles.
Yeah.
That whole first U.S. tour.
Yeah.
And he was just a newscaster from Philly.
Yeah.
So.
And these were young. In those days, Jagger was in his 20s.
Right.
They were all in their 20s. They were all born circa 1941, 42, in and about. So in 1965, they were all 23, 24.
24 years old, yeah.
They were young. They were extremely rich. They had access to lots of liquor, lots of drugs, and lots of girls. And nature going to do what nature going to do. Not to say, for all of our deeply devout moral friends, that that's the right thing to do. It's just the way it was.
I mean, even up into the 80s, there were a lot of young girls around.
All I can say is this, in defense of the guys, or in defense of that whole situation for that matter, the women didn't go on to have news programs, cable news programs in prime time. And the guys didn't go on to build estates in Florida and become presidents. They went on and did their rock thing as far as when they were screwing around and it was that kind of scandalous, oh my gosh, thing. My main personal philosophical intake or take on the whole thing, and I've thought about this very much this week as we put the show together, was I think the feeling deep in the rootest of my heart is absolute and total envy and jealousy because I never got a chance to live that lifestyle. I didn't, we were in a garage band that played monkey songs, for God's sake. Nobody wanted to screw you with that.
Yeah, we lived a pretty cool lifestyle, coming up through the 80s because we were very big in this region.
Yeah.
Not Beatles big or nationwide, but we were regionally big.
I don't know. I heard a story not too long about some lady who cornered you in the room back there and offered you $100 if you'd marry her.
That was like a crazy. That's a crazy.
Yeah, none of the rest of them were crazy. All right, here's a little something out of the ordinary. I've been mildly hyping in my little moment on the bye-bye each week about this podcast that I've been putting together, which is an audiobook meets podcast version of my memoir from some years ago called I've Never Heard of You Either.
Excellent book, by the way.
Thank you. And I thought if only it had pictures. Yeah, I know. And I'm putting together, it's an audio book, but I include other things, which makes it more of a podcast. It's going to end up being about 12 episodes. The first episode will be available in about another 3 weeks. But I thought, hey, I got this other podcast I do with this famous guy, Dave Simmons, who gets hit on by women that want to marry him and, give him $100 at a time. I thought, I'll take advantage of this for just a minute if you don't mind indulging me. And a little thing that we do every now and then called 2 minutes.
And now.
And now.
So how long is this going to take?
2 minutes.
Which is longer than I used to be able to go anyway. So I thought, instead of, I think I did this with my other podcast once or twice, 45 RPM. This is a 2 minute excerpt from one episode of the audiobook/podcast. I don't remember which chapter it is. It doesn't matter. It just gives you a little taste flavor of what's going to be coming when the whole thing is done. 2 minutes from I've Never Heard of You Either.
You're listening to I've Never Heard of You Either. With Scott Edward Phelps.
Okay, so, Steve Cropper. World-class musician, a much-in-demand studio guitarist who played with and or was a member of the iconic Booker T and the MGs, Sam and Dave, Junior Walker and the All-Stars, and a host of others, including, in later years, the inspired and highly popular Dan Aykroyd, John Belushi tribute to all things soul, the Blues Brothers.
I'm soul man. Thanks, Steve.
uber-successful songwriter responsible for the writing or co-writing of massive hits for the aforementioned Booker T, Sam and Dave, etc., and, of course, the Blues Brothers.
Hey, Steve!
Not to mention a guy that he hung around with until the guy took the Buddy Holly path to eternal fame by ending up in a pile of plane wreckage at the peak of his success, Otis Redding. Yes, that Otis Redding.
Army Mr. Pitiful. Baby, that's my name.
The Otis Redding who co-wrote Sittin' on the Dock of the Bay.
Just sittin' on the dock of the bay. Time.
Co-wrote with Steve Cropper. Ah, you're saying to yourself.
I left my home in Georgia.
That's Steve Cropper.
Headed for the Frisco Bay.
Steve was part of the staff acquisition phase of the Merritt Music operation. It was there, in one of those inevitable passing and bumping into each other in the hallway kind of things, that I met Steve Cropper. And it was there, one day, in casual conversation, I had the chance to thank him for something that he had no idea he had done a long, long time ago. Saving my life.
The podcast and the program are called I've Never Heard of You Either. It will be available sometime in about, I think, well, let's just say first week of March. Wherever you find our podcast, you'll find it as well.
Dave Simmons, Scott Edward Phelps, The Audiophiles.
His mama, she laughed, she said, go Sando. Your daddy ain't your daddy, but your daddy don't know. Oh, he worries me. Shame and scandal in the family.
And speaking of bye-bye, I think it's about time for that.
And now, the moment you've all been waiting for.
Can you move it out of here?
Okay, wrap it up, kid.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
The Audiophiles.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
In which the man that women want to throw money at and have them marry him forever has a whole line of products that he'd like to talk to you about. As he rolls the kiosk
as
up, opens for business.
Yes, the kiosk is open for business. I'd like to thank Nia Cox from Access Energy Drinks. Nia, you're always on point. Really appreciate it. Robbie and Lynn, Trinity Cymbals, which I will be in the Trinity Cymbals booth at the Delaware Drum Show February 25th. In Newcastle, Delaware, just hanging out with Bernard Purdy. The two of us will be in the booth just talking cymbals. HHD Drums, thanks, Sam and Kevin. Amazing work you guys always do. My brushed aluminum snare fits any situation I go into. You guys are amazing. And last but certainly not least, hello, Indonesia. Iowa at Solo Beat Drumsticks. Thank you very much, Iowa. All of my drumsticks and cymbals and snares, they're all available at Earl Teat Music, both locations, Dover and Del Mar. You can pick up the signature sticks. You can order custom snares. You can get Trinity cymbals. Stop by and see Dean and Dale. Log in online. And,
And I understand they have a new drum tech over there.
Hi, I'm Hal Blaine. Let's play drums. One, two.
And yes, and we'll be doing the part two of Hal Blaine soon. And actually, I reached out to someone to see if they wanted to be involved. So,
offer them $100. That seems stay to get tuned. Things done for you.
Now that gets you thrown out the back door. what about you, Scott? How's the?
I won't be ignored, Dan.
45 RPM.
Well, 45 RPM has new episodes posted each and every week in the same platforms where you can find our program here. So feel free to check it out this week. I think it's something about sharing the segments. I took regular hit pop songs and I framed them. The way we used to do, well, kind of like we do here, but we framed them on morning radio with, and now it's time for stupid pet tricks. And then we would play like, you know, some dog song or something. So that's kind of cool. They're a lot of fun though. You should check them out. And I'm very excited. I'm just this close to having Billy do it. By the way, if you had the misfortune of missing the show right after the Grammys, we congratulated Billie Eilish and Phineas on their Grammy for Best Song or Oscar Song or whatever the hell it was. Yes, it sounded just, it's brand new, crisp, progressive. Wow, you've never heard this before from Billie Eilish.
What was I made for?
Again, totally unlike her Oscar-winning song from the James Bond movie.
It's just no time to die.
And a real departure from the stuff she'd been doing before that. I love Billie. I pick on her. I would rather Billie Eilish go country than Beyonce, if you want to know the truth. Because
she could whisper through some country songs. I can't imagine what a honky tonk. I can't imagine what a live show from her is like. It's
Billy?
Yeah.
It's, well, they don't hand out Sominex. I'll put that to you. You know, if you want to go to sleep, it's a style. We tease her because we can. And it's, and kids, okay, it sounds a little old fogey, but come on. Okay. Now her, every song kind of sounds very much like the other song. Okay.
Yes, it does.
They call, in fact, they have, I can't remember what we talked about the other day. I saw it written down somewhere. She's been responsible for it, creating this whole new genre of music they call it nap rock or snore rock or something.
Whisper rock.
It has to do, it's a hip title, but it has to do with the dreamy quality. It's a dreamy quality that she projects.
Not what I dream about.
Well, a nightmare is about to, having to shove women out of dressing room back doors because they're about to kill you. All right, next week, I don't know. I forgot to look at the calendar, and I forget things anyway, so I don't know what we're going to do. But we'll certainly do something. This week, by the way, it's not happened yet, but Valentine's Day. And we also thought about doing a Valentine's Day feature, but, you know, nah.
Nah.
You know, you go, yeah, you play romantic songs, blah, blah. We'll get some candy and some flour. There you go. I'll take you to dinner wherever you want to go, and I'll get off my case. All right.
You know, here's my Valentine's Day advice for everyone. Find somebody that is just as messed up as you are and settle down. Yeah, that's life.
I don't know what to say. You got me all verklempt. And let me tell you something. Dave, I admire and respect what he's done because he's only... His relationship is, how long have you been with Julia now? Like 81 years?
87
years?
Okay. 25.
Well, that's 85 in rock and roll years. So
there you go.
There you go. Me, I have been married, as of this year, 53 years. Cumulatively,
yes.
Well, they all count.
They do.
I just took little breaks of 3 to 5 years in between each of the five marriages.
You got
to
do it.
But you know, if at first you don't succeed, fuck it. That's what
try again.
That's all I got. That's it. Hope you enjoyed the scandals. Keep in tune and check out the John Lennon thing. I think you'll find it interesting, and we'll do some more research.
And also, don't forget our companion podcast, the Audio
Files. And I hope that's made it less confusing for everyone along the way. This week they're all there in their entirety, including Beyonce's brand new country hit, Texas Fold'em, or Texas Hold'em, or Texas Fuck'em. I'm not sure.
Who knows? It's one of those three.
Love you, B. I'm Scott Edward Phelps.
I'm Dave Simmons.
And we are
the
Audio Files.
Well, she was standing by my dressing room after the show. Asked me for my autograph and asked if she could go back to my motel room. But the rest is just a tragic tale. Because 5 short minutes of love don't call me 20 long years in jail.
The Audio Files is produced in the United States of America. Questions, comments, and witty banter welcome. AudioFilesBroadcast@gmail.com.
Well, when I get out of this prison, call me 45. I know I used to like to do it, but I won't remember why. Child, the tragic tale
wasn't worth it. Wasn't worth it.
Because 5 short minutes of love is probably 20 long years.
The Audio Files.